Chapter 6. Being tossed, flung, and rolled in great volumes of water, he kept on repeating mentally, with the utmost precipitation, the words : my God, my God, my God, my God. All at once, in a revolt of misery and despair, he formed the crazy resolution to get out of that. And he began to thresh about with his arms and legs. But as soon as he commenced his wretched struggles, he discovered that he had become somehow mixed up with a face, an oilskin coat, somebody's boots. He clawed ferociously all these things in turn, lost them, found them again, lost them once more, and finally was himself caught in the firm clasp of a pair of stout arms. He returned the embrace closely round a thick, solid body. He had found his captain. They tumbled over and over, tightening their hug. Suddenly the water let them down with a brutal bang, and, stranded against the side of the wheelhouse, out of breath and bruised, they were left to stagger up in the wind, and hold on where they could. Jukes came out of it rather horrified, as though he had escaped some unparalleled outrage directed at his feelings. It weakened his faith in himself. He started shouting aimlessly to the man he could feel near him in that fiendish blackness, "Is it you, sir? Is it you, sir?" till his temples seemed ready to burst. And he heard in answer a voice, as if crying far away, as if screaming to him fretfully from a very great distance, the one word, "S." Other seas swept again over the bridge. He received them defenselessly right over his bare head, with both his hands engaged in holding. The motion of the ship was extravagant. Her lurches had an appalling helplessness. She pitched as if taking a header into a void, and seemed to find a wall to hit every time. When she rolled, she fell on her side headlong, and she would be righted back by such a demolishing blow that Jukes felt her reeling as a clubbed man reels before he collapses. The gale howled and scuffled about gigantically in the darkness, as though the entire world were one black gully. At certain moments the air streamed against the ship, as if sucked through a tunnel with a concentrated solid force of impact that seemed to lift her clean out of the water and keep her up for an instant with only a quiver running through her from end to end. And then she would begin her tumbling again, as if dropped back into a boiling cauldron. Jukes tried hard to compose his mind and judge things coolly. The sea, flattened down in the heavier gusts, would uprise and overwhelm both ends of the Nanshan in snowy rushes of foam, expanding wide, beyond both rails, into the night. And on this dazzling sheet, spread under the blackness of the clouds and emitting a bluish glow, Captain McWhirr could catch a desolate glimpse of a few tiny specks black as ebony, the tops of the hatches, the battened companions, the heads of the covered winches, the foot of a mast. This was all he could see of his ship. Her middle structure, covered by the bridge which bore him, his mate, the close wheelhouse where a man was steering shut up with the fear of being swept overboard together with the whole thing in one great crash. Her middle structure was like a half-tide rock awash upon a coast. It was like an outlying rock with the water boiling up, streaming over, pouring off, beating round like a rock in the surf to which shipwrecked people cling. Before they let go, only it rose, it sank, it rolled continuously, without respite and rest, like a rock that should have miraculously struck adrift from a coast and gone wallowing upon the sea. The Nanshan was being looted by the storm with a senseless destructive fury. Trysails torn out of the extra gaskets, double lashed awnings blown away, bridge swept clean, weather cloths burst, rails twisted, light screens smashed, and two of the boats had gone already. They had gone unheard and unseen, melting, as it were, in the shock and smother of the wave. It was only later, when upon the white flash of another high sea hurling itself amidships, Jukes had a vision of two pairs of davits leaping black and empty out of the solid blackness, with one overhauled fall flying and an iron-bound block capering in the air, that he became aware of what had happened within about 3 yards of his back. He poked his head forward, groping for the ear of his commander. His lips touched it big, fleshy, very wet. He cried in an agitated tone, "Our boats are going now, sir." And again he heard that voice, forced and ringing feebly, but with a penetrating effect of quietness in the enormous discord of noises, as if sent out from some remote spot of peace beyond the black wastes of the gale. Again he heard a man's voice, the frail and indomitable sound that can be made to carry an infinity of thought, resolution, and purpose, that shall be pronouncing confident words on the last day, when heavens fall, and justice is done. Again he heard it, and it was crying to him, as if from very, very far, LL right. He thought he had not managed to make himself understood. Boats, I say, boats, the boats, sir. Two gone. The same voice, within a foot of him, and yet so remote, yelled sensibly, "Can't be helped." Captain McWhirr had never turned his face, but Jukes caught some more words on the wind. What can expect when hammering through such bound, to leave something behind stands to reason. Watchfully Jukes listened for more. No more came. This was all Captain McWhirr had to say. And Jukes could picture to himself, rather than see the broad squat back before him. An impenetrable obscurity pressed down upon the ghostly glimmers of the sea. A dull conviction seized upon Jukes, that there was nothing to be done. If the steering gear did not give way, if the immense volumes of water did not burst the deck in or smash one of the hatches, if the engines did not give up, if way could be kept on the ship against this terrific wind, and she did not bury herself in one of these awful seas, of whose white crests alone, topping high above her bows, he could now and then get a sickening glimpse, then there was a chance of her coming out of it. Something within him seemed to turn over, bringing uppermost the feeling that the Nan Shan was lost. "She's done for," he said to himself, with a surprising mental agitation, as though he had discovered an unexpected meaning in this thought. One of these things was bound to happen. Nothing could be prevented now, and nothing could be remedied. The men on board did not count, and the ship could not last. This weather was too impossible. Jukes felt an arm thrown heavily over his shoulders, and to this overture he responded with great intelligence, by catching hold of his captain round the waist. They stood clasped thus in the blind night, bracing each other against the wind, cheek to cheek and lip to ear, in the manner of two hulks lashed stem to stern together. And Jukes heard the voice of his commander hardly any louder than before, but nearer, as though, starting to march athwart the prodigious rush of the hurricane, it had approached him, bearing that strange effect of quietness like the serene glow of a halo. "Do you know where the hands got to?" it asked, vigorous and evanescent at the same time, overcoming the strength of the wind, and swept away from Jukes instantly. Jukes didn't know. They were all on the bridge, when the real force of the hurricane struck the ship. He had no idea where they had crawled to. Under the circumstances they were nowhere, for all the use that could be made of them. Somehow the captain's wish to know distressed Jukes. "Want the hands, sir?" he cried, apprehensively. "Ought to know," asserted Captain McWhirr. "H hold hard." They held hard. An outburst of unchained fury, a vicious rush of the wind absolutely steadied the ship. She rocked only, quick and light like a child's cradle, for a terrific moment of suspense, while the whole atmosphere, as it seemed, streamed furiously past her, roaring away from the tenebrous earth. It suffocated them, and with eyes shut they tightened their grasp. What from the magnitude of the shock, might have been a column of water running upright in the dark, butted against the ship, broke short, and fell on her bridge, crushingly, from on high, with a dead burying weight. A flying fragment of that collapse, a mere splash, enveloped them in one swirl from their feet over their heads, filling violently their ears, mouths and nostrils with salt water. It knocked out their legs, wrenched in haste at their arms, seethed away swiftly under their chins, and opening their eyes, they saw the piled up masses of foam dashing to and fro amongst what looked like the fragments of a ship. As he had given way, as if driven straight in. Their panting hearts yielded to, before the tremendous blow, and all at once she sprang up again to her desperate plunging, as if trying to scramble out from under the ruins. The seas in the dark seemed to rush from all sides, to keep her back where she might perish. There was hate in the way she was handled, and a ferocity in the blows that fell. She was like a living creature thrown to the rage of a mob. Hustled terribly, struck at, borne up, flung down, leaped upon. Captain McWhirr and Jukes kept hold of each other, deafened by the noise, gagged by the wind, and the great physical tumult beating about their bodies, brought, like an unbridled display of passion, a profound trouble to their souls. One of those wild and appalling shrieks that are heard at times passing mysteriously overhead in the steady roar of a hurricane, swooped, as if borne on wings, upon the ship, and Jukes tried to outscream it. Will she live through this? The cry was wrenched out of his breast. It was as unintentional as the birth of a thought in the head, and he heard nothing of it himself. It all became extinct at once, thought, intention, effort, and of his cry the inaudible vibration added to the tempest waves of the air. He expected nothing from it. Nothing at all. For indeed what answer could be made? But after a while he heard with amazement the frail and resisting voice in his ear, the dwarf sound, unconquered in the giant tumult. She may. It was a dull yell, more difficult to seize than a whisper. And presently the voice returned again, half submerged in the vast crashes, like a ship battling against the waves of an ocean. Let's hope so, it cried small, lonely and unmoved, a stranger to the visions of hope or fear, and it flickered in two disconnected words colon ship. Dot 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 this. Dot 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 never anyhow dot 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 for the best. Jukes gave it up. Then, as if it had come suddenly upon the one thing fit to withstand the power of a storm, it seemed to gain force and firmness for the last broken shouts. Keep on hammering. Dot dot builders dot 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 good men. Dot 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 and chance it. Dot dot engines. Dot 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 route dot 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 good man. Captain McWhirr removed his arm from Jukes' shoulders, and thereby ceased to exist for his mate, so dark it was. Jukes, after a tense stiffening of every muscle, would let himself go limp all over. The gnawing of profound discomfort existed side by side with an incredible disposition to somnolence, as though he had been buffeted and worried into drowsiness. The wind would get hold of his head and try to shake it off his shoulders. His clothes, full of water, were as heavy as lead, cold and dripping like an armor of melting ice. He shivered. It lasted a long time, and with his hands closed hard on his hold, he was letting himself sink slowly into the depths of bodily misery. His mind became concentrated upon himself in an aimless, idle way, and when something pushed lightly at the back of his knees he nearly, as the saying is, jumped out of his skin. In the start forward he bumped the back of Captain McWhirr, who didn't move, and then a hand gripped his thigh. A lull had come, a menacing lull of the wind, the holding of a stormy breath, and he felt himself pawed all over. It was the boatswain. Jukes recognized these hands, so thick and enormous, that they seemed to belong to some new species of man. The boatswain had arrived on the bridge, crawling on all fours against the wind, and had found the chief mate's legs with the top of his head. Immediately he crouched and began to explore Jukes' person upwards with prudent apologetic touches, as became an inferior. He was an ill-favored, undersized, gruff sailor of 50, coarsely hairy, short-legged, long-armed, resembling an elderly ape. His strength was immense, and in his great lumpy paws, bulging like brown boxing gloves on the end of furry forearms, the heaviest objects were handled like playthings. Apart from the grizzled pelt on his chest, the menacing demeanor and the hoarse voice, he had none of the classical attributes of his rating. His good nature almost amounted to imbecility. The men did what they liked with him, and he had not an ounce of initiative in his character, which was easygoing and talkative. For these reasons Jukes disliked him, but Captain McWhirr, to Jukes' scornful disgust, seemed to regard him as a first-rate petty officer. He pulled himself up by Juke's coat, taking that liberty with the greatest moderation, and only so far as it was forced upon him by the hurricane. "What is it, Boston? What is it?" yelled Jukes, impatiently. What could that fraud of a Boston want on the bridge? The typhoon had got on Jukes' nerves. The husky bellowings of the other, though unintelligible, seemed to suggest a state of lively satisfaction. There could be no mistake. The old fool was pleased with something. The boatswain's other hand had found some other body, for in a changed tone he began to inquire, "Colin, is it you, sir? Is it you, sir?" The wind strangled his howls. "Yes," cried Captain McWhirr. IV, all that the boatswain, out of a superabundance of yells, could make clear to Captain McWhirr was the bizarre intelligence that all them Chinamen in the fore tween deck have fetched away, sir. Jukes to leeward could hear these two shouting within 6 inches of his face, as you may hear on a still night half a mile away two men conversing across a field. He heard Captain McWhirr's exasperated, "Hat? What?" and the strained pitch of the other's hoarseness. "Any lump. ... seen them myself. ... awful sight, sir. ... tell you." Jukes remained indifferent, as if rendered irresponsible by the force of the hurricane, which made the very thought of action. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.